Welcome to the South Carolina Lead, a podcast that breaks down state political news for you and provides insight on legislative happenings under the Statehouse Dome in Columbia. Hello, I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode is for the week of May 21st, 2019. The Statehouse corruption probe remains ongoing and has once again ensnared Richard Quinn, who at one time ran one of South Carolina's top political consultant firms. He's been charged with obstruction of justice and 11 counts of lying to the state grand jury, despite pledging cooperation as part of a plea deal involving his son Rick, who was found guilty of misconduct in office, along with several other Republican lawmakers. We have the latest. The Lead is a podcast where we go behind the headlines with the reporters who wrote the stories affecting you. Every Tuesday, we give you a roundup of news, insight into the week's biggest stories, campaign trail intrigue, and a chaser of trivia. You can listen to all four sections instead of exploring Dank Frank's SoundCloud. Some good titles on there. Or instead of writing that 5,000-word hot take internet think piece on Robert Pattinson being the next Batman. LeadPod will never Robert Pattinson you. LeadPod refuses to have that glitter vampire on here. Now for our brief quorum call. Quorum call is a term to see if there's a majority present, but here in the South Carolina Lead, we know a majority of the time that you're not always current with the news. So here's a quick recap of several top stories you should know about. Number one, the Free Times reports that the Columbia City Council has banned vaping in places traditional smoking has already been banned, such as bars, restaurants, workplaces, and public events such as Soda City Market. The first offense is a $100 fine. Meanwhile, across the river in Lexington County, Juul Labs Incorporated announced it's building a $125 million assembly facility and will create 500 new jobs. Juul forecasts it will generate $3.4 billion in revenue this year. Number two, the state newspaper reports that 21-year-old Frank John Wilberding, also known as aspiring rapper Dank Frank, is accused of burning two Columbia houses owned by Governor Henry McMaster and his wife. 12 people were staying in the houses at the time of the fires and escaped safely. Wilberding faces 3 counts of arson, possession of controlled substance, and 10 counts of assault and battery. He caused an estimated $450,000 in damage to McMaster's homes. Wilberding isn't suspected of targeting McMaster because his father said he couldn't name the governor even if I paid him $1 million, according to the Post and Courier. Thanks, Dad. Number three, the Associated Press reports that a Duke Energy executive feels that the company is being treated unfairly by state regulators because they are angry at other utilities, such as Santee Cooper and SCANA, which is now Dominion Energy, following the nuclear project boondoggle. This comes after the Public Service Commission called a proposed $20 rate hike by Duke as tone-deaf, and the company later agreed to an increase of less than $5. Number four, the Post and Courier reports that Carnival Cruise Line's massive ship named Sunshine will now call Charleston's Union Pier its full-time home. It's the third Carnival ship to be based in Charleston since operations began at the pier in 2010. It carries just over 3,000 passengers, which is almost 1,000 more than Ecstasy, its predecessor. Voyages will continue to the Bahamas and now include Bermuda, Cuba, and the Eastern Caribbean. The South Carolina Ports Authority expects about 230,000 cruise passengers will visit Charleston this fiscal year. Better watch out for those buffet lines. They're coming. And now for some Florida Man news. Every week we give you just a headline, a taste, if you will, of the most captivating Florida Man news. Headline: Florida Man drives Cadillac from sunroof down highway, says he'd rather go to jail than back to his wife. Eesh. And just like that pending divorce, we've buried the lead. The Statehouse corruption probe. Yes, remember that investigation that's been rooting out crooked state politicians who have violated the public trust they swore to uphold? Well, it's still ongoing. And the once-famed political kingmaker, Richard Quinn, has recently found himself in legal hot water again as a result of his now-disgraced political empire. Yes, Richard Quinn, a name our leaders should be familiar with. And it looks like the last time we talked about this investigation in depth was last October. There's been some limited activity since then, and also some recent activity with Quinn getting indicted. And just a reminder that we haven't seen any action on ethics reform bills this session, despite the grand jury saying that South Carolina's laws are too lax. So to catch us up on where things are right now, we brought in Meg Kennard with the Associated Press. Meg, welcome back.
Thank you. It's good to be back.
And it's just Meg today.
All right. Flying solo.
A little birthday pod for Meg. Meg, a month ago we had some developments in this political corruption saga, which was that Richard Quinn was being indicted on 11 counts of perjury and one count of obstruction of justice. Those are some hefty charges. But the last time we heard about Richard was that he was going to be cooperating with the grand jury as part of a plea deal with Rick Quinn, his son, so he could avoid going to trial for that. So it's kind of interesting now to see that, yes, I'm going to work with the grand jury. I'm going to tell the truth is what you do when you get sworn in to do that. And now here we are, 11 counts of lying to the grand jury. What does that mean for Richard? And what were some of those takeaways in those indictments that we saw?
Sure. I mean, this is one of those situations where we kind of thought it was over, at least for Richard Quinn. Mm-hmm. You know, as you said, he agreed to cooperate. He agreed to talk to the state grand jury and tell them what he knew as part of a plea deal, as part of his son's case, but also something that made his previous charges go away, his illegal lobbying that he was originally charged with. But in these new indictments that came out in April, there were a multitude of new charges for perjury as well as one for obstruction. That all dates back to work that Richard Quinn was doing for Attorney General Alan Wilson back in the very beginning stages of this probe, which started, unbelievably, I had to read back and kind of jog my memory, in 2014. Mm-hmm. So this is now a five-year-old saga. And early on in that, Richard Quinn, through his firm, RQA, Richard Quinn Associates, was doing a lot of work for many politicians in South Carolina, among them Attorney General Alan Wilson. And as part of that, he did two things according to these indictments. He helped draft a letter to send to Solicitor David Pascoe, who everyone will recall has taken over this probe. The Attorney General recused himself because of his close relationship with some of the people involved, including Richard Quinn. And so David Pascoe took things over, and that was something that didn't really sit well with the Attorney General after the Bobby Harrell case was over, after the original piece of all of this had concluded. But David Pascoe kept going with the probe, and as part of that, Richard Quinn helped the Attorney General draft a letter basically stating why he thought that that would be improper and something that should no longer continue. According to the solicitor's new charges, he also helped draft a news release that dealt with Bobby Harrell's plea in this case. Those are two items, according to the state grand jury information, that Richard Quinn was heavily involved with the Attorney General with. And during his testimony, allegedly, to the state grand jury, he was not completely truthful in terms of how all that went down, why he was associated that closely with the Attorney General at that point. Richard Quinn purportedly told the state grand jury that he was doing all of that because he was Alan Wilson's de facto press secretary, mm-hmm. that Wilson didn't have somebody who could do that, and so Richard Quinn stepped in. Unfortunately, that was contradicted by what the Attorney General himself told prosecutors in the state grand jury, which actually he did have someone on staff who could be his press secretary and who could have purportedly been doing that. So that's where this kind of boils down in terms of Richard Quinn's most recent charges and where that comes from, allegedly, of course, mm-hmm. from the indictments.
And then there's some additional information in those indictments regarding others that have been ensnared in this probe, too. Former Senator John Corson and former lawmakers Jim Harrison. And others that were involved in this. So there's a lot of other perjury charges dealing with those actors as well. But it's interesting to look at the grand jury report that was released last fall mm-hmm. that, you know, the grand jury did raise concerns about Wilson's relationship with the subjects of the investigation, which was right. also obviously a reason why he said he wanted to recuse himself. But they did think that, you know, Wilson did maybe delay some things, which, again, Wilson denied and came out against strongly. But I'm wondering if this maybe reignites some of those concerns because— You know, he's saying, oh, it's never happened, but now here we are seeing some double talk going on there. Do you think that casts a shadow or a little bit more of an issue?
It's certainly not something that Alan Wilson wants to be brought back up. I think that's fair to say. He is also now at this point securely in his third term in office. So he has a lot of political capital. He's been now reelected twice by very significant margin this past go-around. So politically, he's in good shape. But you're right in terms of optics. This is not a situation that the Attorney General wants to continue to be in the public sphere. He has said repeatedly, as you note, that he had no idea of anything improper that was occurring with Richard Quinn or any associated clients. But the specter of being close to, being tangential to a situation like this that has resulted in one of these people, Jim Harrison, you mentioned, being sentenced to actual jail time. There were a lot of deals. There was a lot of probation for some of the other people who were ensnared in this. But Jim Harrison has been sentenced to go to jail. Mm-hmm. So to be even remotely associated with any of that is certainly not something that a statewide elected official in any state, here's what we're talking about, would want to be affiliated. But it is important to note that all of the high-level clients of whom we're aware, Henry McMaster, our governor, Alan Wilson, our attorney general, his father, Joe Wilson, none of them have been implicated in any way mm-hmm. in any of this. So while it's something they probably wish would go away and that we wouldn't keep talking about and reminding people yeah. that they used to be Quinn clients, they have never been implicated of having done anything directly wrong.
And we saw that play out last year during the elections, too. I mean, that was a big issue, especially in the primaries for
right,
a lot of those Republican candidates.
Right.
And then also even, you know, for the attorney general and his race. Going forward for Election Day, but still managed, I mean, no issues there, pretty wide margins for everyone, didn't seem to do too much damage.
No.
So I think that kind of shows maybe the state of how people feel about these things. But again, neither of those guys were implicated in any of this either.
Right.
So it's just the tangential nature of the situation.
And as we discussed during the Republican primary in particular, the corruption allegations, some of the Republicans who are running against the governor trying to connect him to this whole scheme, none of that came up in the general election. Mm-hmm. So that right there, and we discussed it last year, that shows how political a lot of those issues were and that general election voters really just weren't concerned.
Mm-hmm. And you mentioned Jim Harrison, former lawmaker. He was found guilty of two counts of misconduct and one count of perjury by a jury, and that was in mm-hmm. October. And he was sentenced to 18 months in prison, but he's appealing that. He's out pending that appeal right now. So
right.
only one facing that. And then also companies that were retained by Richard Quinn and Associates, such as Palmetto Health, the Trial Lawyers Association, AT&T, University of South Carolina, and Scana, were fined collectively to the tune of $352,000 for failing to report the use of Quinn's services to gain influence over public officials. So a lot of other players involved there, maybe a lot of things that people didn't maybe follow along with, but there was a lot of big names involved in this probe that's still ongoing.
There were, and there was a time where people like us were doing a lot of digging in a lot of different directions because it wasn't clear exactly how broad and how deep all of this would be. I remember submitting FOIA requests for the State Ports Authority and the University of South Carolina and trying to get a hold of whatever records there were that pertained to work done with Richard Quinn and Associates just because it was unknown. Mm. Because after Solicitor David Pascoe was given such a wide, or the argument between Pascoe and Attorney General Wilson about exactly how much authority Pascoe had endured for a long time. But once it became clear that the solicitor was going to continue with this probe and continue wherever he felt it should lead him, mm-hmm. that left a lot of uncertainty among us who were trying to figure out, okay, well, are we going to be writing about this? Is this the next lost trust? Is it really going to result in the resignations and absence of, you know, a multitude of lawmakers? Yes, there were a few that got hooked up in it, but it certainly wasn't as broad as it seemed. Mm-hmm. At least in terms of the public officials.
Well, and that was the thing, too, that the Quinns kept saying, especially Rick Quinn, Richard's son, they kept calling it a witch hunt, you mm-hmm. know. And that was something we did kind of hear, you know, back when Rick was sentenced as part of a plea deal, that they got off too easy. The Quinns used that sentencing last year to say, hey, look, things weren't as bad as everyone made it sound like. Mm-hmm. But now here we are with 11 perjury charges and one obstruction charge. So it seems like it's easy to say, yes, there were no problems in the beginning, but now things seem to start unraveling. So I guess they were as bad as, you know, they tried to make it not sound like they were.
Right. The part of the problem comes, and we've seen this play out recently in some federal cases that have involved the Trump administration and some people who've been involved with it, that sometimes it's not the original action that seems to have hooked somebody into a potential charge mm-hmm. or indictment situation. It's lying about it or allegedly lying about it. And that's what's at case here with Richard Quinn having testified before the state grand jury, which he agreed to do to make his case go away, and then allegedly not having been truthful in terms of describing why he did certain things or why his firm did certain things. As it is in federal cases, a crime to lie to the FBI when they ask you questions. Here, it is a crime to lie to the statewide grand jury when you are being asked to and sworn under oath to tell the truth about something. So it's not necessarily the original bad act that has Richard Quinn back in court again. It's what he said to the authorities about what happened years ago.
So moral of the story, tell the truth?
I mean, I would say that's probably a better idea. But one thing that's important to remember, too, is in describing how it went down from his point of view, you know, Richard Quinn, his lawyers have said that, you know, he's old. He's 74 years old. He has had moments where he struggles a little bit with remembering things. And this is all coming from him and his attorneys. So it depends on how much weight and heft authorities really give to some of those justifications in terms of remembering things that happened years ago.
Mm-hmm. But definitely facing some substantial potential jail time.
65 possible years.
If convicted. So where is the way out for Richard Quinn? I'm guessing he's not going to get another plea deal if he's already in violation of one. So
it's hard to know what could lead to a plea deal in this case because I wouldn't imagine there's much more that Richard Quinn can give.
Do you even have credibility at that point?
Exactly. I mean, why would they believe him if he has now allegedly lied to them after promising to tell them the truth to make a previous case go away? So you're right. It may be a very sticky wicket for him to try to get around these new charges, but they are significant. There's 55 possible years on the perjury counts and 10 years on obstruction. When you're 74 years old, that is essentially a life sentence. I wouldn't imagine that if this did go to that point that he would get that much significant time. That would be far and away more than anyone affiliated with this case has ever gotten. Mm-hmm. But it is a very large obstacle between him and the resolution of it.
Well, and there's really, I mean, they've raided his home in the beginning of this. I mean, mm-hmm. they've raided his office. They got all the documents and, you know, emails and the like that they could possibly get, unless there's some sort of, I don't know, something out there that he can give them or prove. I'm guessing that's the only thing.
Unknown storage unit, right.
Yeah, at this point, it just seems like, I guess I would have to go to jury trial at that point.
That would be very interesting to observe. And his attorney, who's a former federal prosecutor herself, is very familiar with how all sides of legal cases operate. She has said that these are spurious charges, essentially, and that there's nothing to them. Of course, any good defense attorney is going to say mm-hmm. that at this point in the game. But it will be incredibly interesting if Richard Quinn, people have given him all kinds of nicknames, but I mean, he has been essentially a kingmaker in Republican politics for decades in South Carolina. Mm-hmm. If he were to go on trial for work that he allegedly lied about for one of them, that would be something I would imagine that would be among the more significant things that we've seen happen in our courts for quite some time.
Mm-hmm. And then, Meg, just wondering, this is still ongoing, this investigation is still open. Do we know of any other additional potential targets or anyone else that's still being investigated at this point?
At this point, I don't think so. We have thought for quite some time, particularly with the resolution of Jim Harrison's case last year, that mm-hmm. this was pretty much over. There is one more former lawmaker, Tracy Edge, mm-hmm. whose case is still kind of in the offing. But aside from him, it has been thought that this was pretty much wrapped up. And prosecution has said as much when the report was released last fall, that their investigatory work was pretty much done. Mm-hmm. So unless there's something hiding in that report that's already been released, I would imagine that the bulk of it we already know about at this point.
And then just wrapping up again, like we mentioned at the top, we didn't see anything move with ethics reforms this year. It's been a while since we have, and it just seems like everyone's okay with business as usual in South Carolina.
Well, you know, I think that a lot of politicians, particularly in election years, like to talk about ethics reform and how they are so far from being possibly corrupt and they themselves want to push to hold each other accountable. Unfortunately, though, when we get to the legislative session, there are often far many more kitchen table type issues. Like this year, we had education. Last year, there was Scanner. There's always something that comes up that is immediate and must be dealt with right now. So for a variety of reasons, but that being among them, ethics reform continues to get pushed down the list. And it's unknown if we'll really see anything significant happen next session either.
Mm-hmm. It's one of those things that people don't care about until there is a scandal.
Right.
All of a sudden, it's, why aren't we doing anything? And, you know, they always get, you know, mad about how politicians get away with things. And, you know, when you're vested with regulating yourself.
Right, when you're the self-policing authority, that's right.
It's kind of hard. So
yeah.
A lot to take in. Again, like you said, former state rep Tracy Edges still has some charges pending dealing with criminal conspiracy, perjury, and misconduct in office charges. So the fifth person as part of that overall investigation that's been caught up in this. So we still need to see what's going on with that, and of course with Jim Harrison's appeal, and then what's going to happen with Richard Quinn at this point going forward. So still a lot of things outstanding with this mm-hmm. ongoing investigation, but we'll be keeping up with it with Meg Kinnard and other reporters that cover this. Thanks, Meg.
Absolutely.
It's that time again for some campaign trail news updates. We're looking at the latest in 2020-related movements affecting South Carolina, state campaign news, and highlights from the state's congressional delegation. Senator Lindsey Graham's new immigration bill would expand the number of days migrant children could be held in detention from 20 days to 100. He said this is to combat immigrants who bring children to the country knowing they can skip out on future court hearings after the minor is released. His bill would also require migrants to apply for asylum at a consulate in their home country, not at the Mexican border. In a Natural Resources Committee meeting last week, 1st Congressional District Representative Joe Cunningham questioned Interior Secretary David Bernhardt about the current state of offshore drilling, which has been indefinitely postponed. Bernhardt said the agency is still developing a leasing plan for waters off the coast and that seismic air gun blasting permits are still being processed. And mark your calendars, California Senator Kamala Harris will participate in a live MSNBC town hall from Wofford College in Spartanburg on May 28th at 10 p.m. In our final section, Did You Know?, we focus on one quirky function of the state, politics or government. It's named after the parliamentary procedure that lawmakers use when speaking to each other. Did you know that South Carolina Public Radio's Russ McKinney is here with some state trivia for us? Well, he is. What do you have for us, Russ?
Hey, great to be here.
What the hell? AT?
I got you guys.
What are you doing? Oh, that's right. Russ is sick. And we also have Meg Kennard with us. She's stuck around.
Hi.
Oh, wonderful. This is my largest speaking role, so I'm very excited.
Oh, boy.
From behind the curtain.
All right, AT, what's our question for the week?
Okay, so I've spoken to Russ.
Oh.
And he's given me a question to ask you. I hope it's good enough, and I hope that you guys are obviously, you will be smart enough to get it. So.
And we couldn't even get Russ on the phone because his voice is in.
His voice is gone.
It's not up to Russ' standards, so I don't even want to hear what he sounds like.
R.I.P. in peace. R.I.P. in peace. So here we go. The question this week. Most county seats share the name with the county it's in. Some examples of this would be Charleston, Sumter, Newberry, etc.
Can't you read in Russ's voice?
I don't want to do a bad Russian impression. But a few do not. One such county is Oconee County. So the question is, what is the county seat of Oconee County? Okay.
I think
here's
I
the
know.
List. Here we go. What is the county seat of Oconee County? A, Westminster. B, Seneca. C, Walhalla. D, Kiawee.
Kiawee?
Kiawee.
It's not that one.
Okay, well,
talk
I apologize
out.
If that's actually a city or town in South Carolina, which I've made fun of before.
Rude.
That's actual, so rude.
I didn't mean to make fun of them. I just thought they were made up.
Did you think it was the fruit and kiwi?
I mean, it sounds like a mix between kiwi and Kiowa.
I also could very
kiwi.
Well be
It's like a South Carolina version of kiwi.
Okay, here they are again. A, Westminster. B, Seneca. C, Walhalla. And D, Kiawee.
Yeah, I think C is...
We're going to go with C.
The obvious one because...
All right. You're right. It is C.
Yay.
The answer is C.
And it's not just because Meg is here and she raised her hand when you said C. I just know that, like... I mean,
you just do really well when people raise their hands.
I get really excited.
Yeah.
It's just polite.
Well,
but mostly because I don't know any Kiawee or... I mean, I know Westminster.
I've actually
I know
been
not...
to Walhalla,
yeah.
And I have covered court there, and so that's how I knew it was the county seat because that's where the county courthouse complex. Is.
That is practical knowledge
She's
from
here, direct from Walhalla.
That's why we have her on the pod.
I know.
Well, I hope we did Russ proud.
I think we did. Thank you, AT. Thank you, Meg.
Absolutely.
Thank you, Russ.
Get better, Russ.
We miss you.
Come
this
home
is
soon.
This is untenable.
Please come home.
The South Carolina Lead is one of many ways SCETV wants to help keep you informed. Check out the latest news and live streams on SCETV.org. Listen to coverage from South Carolina Public Radio and watch This Week in South Carolina, a show where I talk with the newsmakers of the week on SCETV, Fridays at 7:30 p.m. and Sundays at 11:30 a.m. All of that, this podcast, and more is available on SCETV's super easy-to-use app and southcarolinapublicradio.org. Subscribe to us, and we'll have a new episode for you every Tuesday on Apple Podcasts. Search us easily on your Android, the NPR One app, or wherever podcasts lurk.
Ooh.
Also, be sure to rate and review us on iTunes, and we'll give you a shout-out. Your name could be here, right now. Ooh! Follow us on Instagram at @scleadpod, and you can see photos from the studio, on assignment, and of course, our dank memes. We're also on Twitter with the same handle, at @scleadpod. We have swag, sticker swag, that is. Send us a direct message on Twitter or Instagram with your address, and we'll send one your way. Email questions, comments, or your gripes to scleade@scetv.org. The South Carolina Lead is produced in partnership with South Carolina ETV, South Carolina Public Radio, and a special thanks to the Associated Press. Our producer is A.T. Shire. Sean Birch is our supervising producer. Tom Posey is our executive producer. This episode was recorded and produced in South Carolina Public Radio's studios here in Columbia on May 17th, 2019. I'm Gavin Jackson. Thanks for listening. Secret message. Brutus stabbed Caesar because he outlawed vaping in the Agora.